So one thing that I notice when I read that passage is how Paul continues to come back to this idea that God wants to do something in us, deep inside of us. These are just a few of the things that we read, that God will empower you empower you with inner strength through his Spirit. Christ will make his home in your hearts, his mighty power at work within us. We sang earlier today, the art of losing myself. It's one of my favorite lines, not just in that song, but really actually like in our song book at the Branch, the art of losing myself. That there's something dynamic about the way that God interacts with us and changes us, and it involves our participation, and yet it's fully dependent on his grace and power, and it's this dance, it's this art, but there's this message that this passage is trying to make clear, that there's this work God wants to do in you. We talked about that last week, so I won't belabor it. You can go back and listen if you weren't here, but this idea that all of ourselves, every part of ourselves, and you and I have different parts. Some parts we like to make public, remember. Some parts we are desperate to keep hidden or we ignore. But all the parts of ourselves, God wants to transform and change. And God invites all of us, all of ourselves and our parts, to this table. That's the metaphor that we used to end last week. So here's this message again, that God wants to work in us. The question is maybe, how does that happen? And in verse 19, we read, may you experience the love of Christ, though it is too great to understand fully, then you will be what? What does it say there? Yeah, made complete. That's good. Next time, maybe a little louder, with a little more gusto, made complete. Right. Thank you. Then you'll be made complete. So there's this connection between experiencing God's love, which is really too great to understand and fully get our heads and hearts around. But it is in that experience that we're made complete. So there's an invitation that God makes to us to experience love. If you're reading from the NIV, if you grabbed a Bible from a chair in front of you, you'll notice that here in verse 19, it's the word know. May you know the love of Christ. It's not a bad translation, except that in our kind of modern context, what does the word know generally mean, or what is it talking about? What would you say? Knowledge, yeah. Here, right? Cognitive knowing of information, of facts. I think the NLT does the right thing here, because the Greek word for know is the kind of knowledge experienced between two lovers. And with a lot of children in the room, I'll just leave it at that for today. Yeah, ugh, right? This intimacy, a deep experiential knowing of another. That's what Paul says makes us complete. That's what transforms us, is a knowledge that involves experience, moves beyond head and gets into heart, if we can use that sort of language. So there's an invitation to experience love, and that love is what unlocks transformation and change. If the knowledge of God's love is only up here, while important, it only gets us so far. It doesn't make us into that complete person that Paul talks about. And there's a real danger that God's love would only be an idea in our head. Yes? Yes. I think Christians tend to fall into two extreme camps on this idea of God's love. And I've experienced both ends of this spectrum. On one end is an overemphasis on experience. That to be a Christian is to have these experiences of God. So for me growing up, that meant things like speaking in tongues, being slain in the Spirit, being in a corporate worship service, whatever you'd like to call it, and having this overwhelming sense of God's presence. In fact, experience mattered so much in my upbringing that if you didn't have an experience of God regularly, there was something wrong with you. Something wrong with your faith. You didn't believe enough, right? So that's that part of my life. And, well, guess what I did? I thought about that and thought some of it maybe was a little off, and so I didn't just kind of leave it. I left it entirely. The pendulum swung all the way to the other side, and I entered a time of my life when knowing God's love had everything to do with this. This is about the time when I'm in seminary, and I went to a great seminary that I think tried to balance this idea of knowing God's love, both experience and knowledge. But still, what is seminary? Knowledge. Thank you, fellow seminarian. You know, it is. It just is. It's what it is. I don't know that that can be changed a whole lot, at least not in its current structure. So I'm living in this point in my life in a place where everything is about belief, right belief, right ideas, getting the right information about God into me. And that was the knowing that was present. I wonder if there isn't a third way that doesn't value both a knowledge of God and a knowledge of God. And the reason why I'm curious about this is because when I look at any human relationship, that's what I see. Any healthy human relationship, any human relationship of significance, what I see are both of those things at play. How do I think of just someone you love and who loves you? Got someone? Picture that person in your mind. You love them, they love you. It's a person of significance, I would imagine, to some degree. What if in that relationship, the only form of love that you knew about them was informational? I've heard this person say, I love you. I went to a wedding in which they shared with me vows. I've seen them do things. You know, I have information about that individual to tell me, and it's important and valuable information. It really is to help inform me about what kind of relationship this is. But what if that's all that it was, and there was no experience of love? I know that word experience is tough to nail down. What are we even talking about here? But I'm talking about, in the most broadest sense, getting out of our heads and into the rest of us and knowing love in that way. I imagine you've had that experience, yes? I would think you have. When I am forgiven by someone that I am in relationship with, there's some information exchanged in some sense, some words being shared back and forth, but there's something much deeper going on as well, right? When you've been forgiven by another person, there's an experience that's happening, a knowledge that moves beyond the head. Okay, I don't want to beat that, but there's this real danger, and I think maybe especially in West Michigan, that we stay only in our head. And so many people, wise, thoughtful followers of Jesus, have said, that's valuable, but it's not enough. Here's the challenge, though. I think that one of the things that keeps us from experiencing God's love is fear. Let me give you some examples from my life, and you can see if they resonate with you at all. So, I was thinking about this one this week. This does not happen often. I want to be very clear. I don't want you to think that I am some super spiritual person, because I'm just not. Sorry. But occasionally, when we are here together in worship, and there's music helping to move us forward in worship, there are moments, occasionally, sometimes when I get out of my head. And the words or the music itself or the voices, your voices that I'm hearing, again, gets me out of my head. And there's an experience that starts to happen, a knowledge of God that's different than just thinking about God or believing about God. Often in those moments, do you know what my first kind of reaction is? Like, as I think about responding to that love of God, I worry about what you're going to think about me. What if I got down on my knees in this moment because I'm so humbled by the love of God? Well, it's a little risky. I don't know. You know, Trevor's sitting behind me. What's Trevor going to think of me? I mean, he's a great guy, but this could really affect our relationship and, you know, whatever. My mind starts to become fearful. That's a practical one. It's maybe kind of concrete in here. Here's another one that I've felt. I think to myself, okay, what if I open myself up entirely and invite God into all of my life with the hope of experiencing God's love? I do that and nothing happens. Maybe you don't, maybe this doesn't resonate with you, but this is one for me. Like, I worry that I'm not gonna experience what I think I should experience, and so that fear keeps me from acting. Or I fear my mistakes. Like, I know that to be loved requires you to surrender and be vulnerable. If I am vulnerable, then that means that my mistakes have to come out into the open. And then what if I'm rejected? And I know up here that God doesn't reject us, but there's a part of me that still doubts that that's actually true. Does my heart believe that? I'm not so sure. And what about being vulnerable? And what if I do that and it's not received? And what if I surrender my life to this love? Well, then I'm not going to be as in control as I want to be, and that terrifies me. I would bet that somewhere in all of us there is some form of fear that keeps us from fully opening up our lives. This is the beginning of a quote from David Benner. I recommended one of his books last week. This is the first one, actually, in that series. It's called Surrender to Love. He says this: while one might expect humans to receive the good news that God is unequivocally for us as good news, in reality, we do not. He's saying you'd think that human beings would hear that there's a creator who loves them without question, does not hold a thing against them. You think we would hear that and say to ourselves, oh, this is really great. This is really great news. We don't, though, often, because we have such an inborn tendency to run our own life and to pay our own way that unconditional love is both unbelievable and terrifying. Unconditional love is both unbelievable and terrifying. Unbelievable because how often do you and I experience unconditional love in our human relationships? Is it often? Occasionally? I mean, let's just be honest, right? Most of our human love has some condition attached to it. We're trying to be followers of Jesus who live differently, but that's just the way that it is. So when we think of unconditional love, it doesn't feel believable. And it's terrifying because the only way you can receive unconditional love is if you surrender your entire life, if you become vulnerable, and that terrifies us. See, accepting and experiencing God's love requires vulnerability and surrender, and both of those things are very scary. Very scary. And so what I want to invite us to do is to take a few minutes here. This is where that piece of paper comes in. You would probably also need a writing utensil. And so borrow a crayon from a child or get a pen. There's a basket of pens out there in the little hallway. And I want to invite us to think for a moment just about what is today true. And I would never think that in the 3 or so minutes that we're going to take, you would have the space and time to fully understand the ways in which fear is at play in your life. So what we're doing here today is a step. Maybe it's even just getting our foot off the ground. It's not even a full step. It's just the beginning of considering for a moment where fear may be present. This piece of paper you're not sharing with anyone. So if you're concerned that we're going to turn them in, you're going to turn them in, and then I'm going to read them out loud. You can let that fear go. Although it might be helpful to share it with somebody at some point. But we're just going to take a moment here to consider where fear might reside in us, and especially thinking about how it may keep us from experiencing God's love. So I'm just going to sit down. We'll have some quiet. Teresa's going to play a little bit of music. She's actually then going to even go into the verse and chorus of a song. You can sing with her if that's helpful for you in your reflection. You can listen to the song and let the words be a gift to you. You can ignore the music. You can do whatever you would like. Again, we'll take about 3 minutes here and just try and name what is. as I shared with you, this is just the beginning of a process, you know. You probably know I've been seeing a therapist every week of sabbatical, and I'm actually continuing to do that because it's been so helpful for me to identify what fears are at play in my life. And so, again, I'm under no illusion that we're going to solve this today, but this is a really important thing to be thinking about and maybe for you to take into the week. Where does fear keep showing up in my life? Now, let me read a verse back again from Ephesians 3. Oh, that's not them. Those are great. That's it. Thanks, Matt. So, remember this again. Paul says, I pray that from God's glorious, unlimited resources, he will empower you with inner strength through the Spirit. Then Christ will make his home in your hearts as you trust in him. So the goal is to experience God. One way we could talk about that is having Christ at home in our hearts. Now, that's a very evangelical thing that we say, and we could talk all about that. But I think the idea here that Paul's trying to make is again, this knowledge, this intimate knowing of another. And that happens more and more as we trust. Trust is the counterpoint to fear. If I am struggling to be vulnerable in one of my relationships, to open myself up to another person, what helps have me have the courage to take that step of vulnerability is if I can look at that relationship over the years or months or however long it's been, and I can see experiences I've had that give me reason to trust that individual. I don't often want to be vulnerable with my wife, but I have 18 years I can look back on, and if I can be reflective enough in the moment, I can realize, oh, there's lots of history here that helps me remember that there's reason to trust. I think maybe the same thing is true of our relationship with God. You may remember that the theme of my sabbatical, I had to write this grant application, and it had to have a theme. Anybody remember? This is like extra credit. I don't know for what, but it's extra credit. Of what the word was that was the kind of heartbeat of my sabbatical? Sankofa, well done, yes. It's on the paper. Well, you wouldn't know that necessarily, but very astute, yeah. Sankofa, it's this word from a tribe in the African country of Ghana. And a rough translation is looking back in order to move ahead. We're people obsessed with the present and future. And this wisdom says you have to also look back because it's in looking back that you find truth, you find reminders of experiences you've had that can propel you forward. So I think this is why the scriptures are full of not only suggestions, but commands for God's people to look back. Have you ever noticed this? It's everywhere. Like in the first five books of the Bible, as God's creating this group, this nation, this family of people, God is always saying to them, look back, remember what happened, don't forget, remember that Red Sea thing, remember that Sinai event, do you remember how I did this? He's always calling the people back. In fact, what does God command Israel to do multiple times every year? Party. Party. God says, I want you to have these festivals every year, throughout the year. Why? You can remember. You can be reminded of what's happened in our past. Because if you are a reflective people, and you can remember what I have done and who I have been to you and how you've experienced my presence among you, it will help you move forward into the future. Now, I am not a reflective person. Anybody else here struggle with being? Some of you are. Some of you are naturally reflective on your life. I am not. I am a in the moment. I have blinders on most days. Like what needs to happen now? Great, done. Now what needs to happen? That's the way I walk through life naturally. And I've been learning over sabbatical that I have to be more reflective. I have to. And one of the reasons is because in reflecting on my life and the places where God has been in my life, my trust in God increases. And as trust increases, fear loses its grip. There's a relationship between the two. So Sankofa, this theme of sabbatical, so important. Let me ask the question, though, what about you? How does Sankofa work in your life? What if we spent a moment here reflecting on God's past faithfulness to you? That's what I want to invite you to do now. I want you to name what has been. This actually, in some ways, is easier than the exercise we just did because some of our fears are so buried in us, we're not aware of them right away. Here's what I'm inviting you to do over the next few minutes. To just look back on your life. Look back on any part of it. Look back on the whole thing. Look back on a period. Doesn't matter. There's no right or wrong. Where and how do you see God being faithful to you? What are examples of God's provision, God's care, God's love? There might be some information for you to glean, but where also have you had an experience? Have you known God as you look back on your life? And just jot little phrases and words and notes down. We'll take a few minutes here. Again, Teresa's going to sing, play some music as a backdrop for us. But let's reflect on that question of and that idea of naming what has been so that we can remember what will be.